Pennsylvania. He's smart, sassy, and definitely not a jinx.
Something's afoot. That's all I'm saying.
It's Matt Steinmetz.
Yeah!
And in this corner, straight out of the Yoon.
I need meat on my bone.
He's a certified stud and definitely isn't still rocking a 92 caddy. It's Daryl the Guru Johnson.
Now, it's time for Steinmetz and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Hello, and a happy Monday to everyone. A victory Monday, as I've decided to call it, because wins for everybody. I am not, as you may have noticed, Matt Steinmetz. The man across from me is not Daryl the Guru Johnson. He is JD. What's up, man?
What's going on, Kolsky? I'm excited, though. I got to tell you, I am excited.
How have we ever had a chance this year to feel better on a Monday than this?
No, it hasn't been. And a wild Monday across the NFL after a wild Sunday yesterday. Just close games everywhere, wild finishes.
We talked about this in the pre-show meeting. Probably the best Sunday of the year, right?
I think without question the best Sunday of the year. And you look up at the end of it, and the 49ers and the Raiders both win at home on the same day. Incredible.
I think if you had taken bets for that any time over the last 10 weeks, like what were the odds you could have gotten on betting 49er and Raider wins the same weekend for the remainder of the year?
They probably wouldn't have been good enough to take.
I mean,
say that regardless.
Yeah, because it seemed impossible, and yet here we are. Victory Monday for everybody, of course, except Reggie McKenzie, who has been relieved of his duties, or I guess decided he didn't want to stay on the remainder of the year, was told he'd be let go at the end of the year, and decided not to stay.
I'm trying to figure out why this is breaking news, though,
right?
Because Reggie McKenzie was essentially fired back on, what, January the 9th, when John Gruden signed his contract for 10 years and $100 million to be the head coach of the Raiders.
And if not then, certainly somewhere around the Khalil Mack trade, right? Or the Bruce, the 1 year Jordy Nelson signing type stuff. Like
exactly.
That was not Reggie McKenzie's work, and it was pretty obvious. So not super surprising he's out the door, but it is kind of funny that it comes a day after the first good performance by the Raiders in a while. As far as the Niners go, you said this in our pre-show meeting. It's about time. They needed a win like this.
Yeah, they really did. All of the fourth quarter collapses and the inability to finish, you could see the frustration building week to week to week on the face of Kyle Shanahan, especially in some of the games, the post-game press conferences. He looked like a guy that needed a win weeks ago.
Yeah.
And needed a few more wins along the way than this squad, even without Jimmy Garoppolo, has been able to get. They needed to not have the Broncos go down and score a touchdown and win that game 21-20, with 30 seconds to go in the game. They needed something to just help reinforce on a young team that believes it's going to be good in 2019 or 2020, reinforce that all the hard work can eventually pay off and you're not just beating your head up against a wall over and over again to take an L.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think one of the noteworthy things about this team under Kyle Shanahan is that given the struggles they've had on the field, they have seemed to hold together off the field, I don't know if surprisingly well, is that fair? They have not had the sort of fracturous locker room that this kind of losing can often lead to, but inevitably it's coming somewhere down the road if you don't get a win here and there, and I'm with you. You just, at a certain point, you got to get some good feeling in the building.
Yeah, you do, because the players that show up every day, week in, week out, really going back to April when the offseason program starts and OTAs and training camp and everything going on, mini camp, everything in between the end of one season and the beginning of the actual training camp in the last week of July, all of those players and coaches that show up over and over and over, they don't give a darn about tanking. They don't give a darn about the number one pick in the draft.
Or the 2029ers.
Exactly. They don't. They want to continue to get paid and have jobs and be successful with this version of the franchise. So I think while, we get carried away a lot, Kolsky, with, another competitive loss. That's awesome. Another competitive loss. Look at those first, that number one overall pick. Look at those standings. I mean, really, it's the best of all worlds for the 49ers, at least for now, because The Raiders wound up winning two, and the Cardinals kind of joined the fray. But the 49ers, their odds of getting the number one pick decreased yesterday.
Yes.
But my point is, I think there's a value in earning a win along the way to not just have your season completely go down the toilet where you're looking at a 7-8 game winning streak to, or losing streak to wrap it up.
Yeah, I have gone on record in favor of tanking is a tricky word because we associate tanking with essentially the Philadelphia 76ers and the process. And tanking in the NFL, to the extent that it exists, is not like tanking in the NBA, where there are 82 games and one player makes a much bigger difference. Tanking in the NFL, it's not that wins are valueless, it's that not all wins have the same value. For instance, I feel like winning yesterday had great value. I feel like an upset win next week would have significantly less value given the extra damage it could do to their draft position.
You just need a couple here and there.
Exactly.
You just need a couple here and there to where it doesn't look like everything has completely gotten away from you to the point where there's no hope. You know, if the Broncos come back and win with the stadium half full of Bronco fans,
yep,
and then the Seahawks come in next week and the place is full of 12s,
yep,
and they're in the playoff race and they hammer you, and then and you haven't won a division game all year, by the way, at that point, and then the Bears come in with Khalil Mack and their elite defense and they suck the life out of you and beat you 19-3 because that's just they're good enough to do that, and just strangle the life out of you there, and there's tons of Bears fans at Levi Stadium. The whole look of how far away you are from even being halfway decent, it changes. And this
right.
is something that I've, you know, from the moment Jimmy Garoppolo went down, my thought on this whole season was, boy, this could get really, really ugly to the point where the way people start to view Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch would change going into 2019 and 2020. A win here, a win there, some competitive losses along the way, that helps stem that tide, I think, to where the continuity can continue to grow. But make no mistake, there's still going to be a lot of pressure on this 49ers franchise to add talent this offseason. The mulligans are over. The honeymoon period is over. The moment that this season ends.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And actually, one of the good things about yesterday and the last few weeks more generally is that it looks like you have in Nick Mullins a guy who can be your backup quarterback, where if you do add a lot of pieces to this team, if Garoppolo went down next year, it might not be as big a disaster as it was this year, although obviously that's not the goal. And a text comes in on the tanking issue, which I think is relevant. Players don't tank. Their jobs are on the line. You don't want bad film out there. Front office may wish to tank, but the players won't do it. And that's true everywhere. I don't think anybody would reasonably dispute that. The question is whether you're set up to actually win. And in the end, today or yesterday's win doesn't actually help your team next year. What you have to do to help your team next year is add a lot of stuff to it. But we saw the power of mojo and vibe in terms of the storylines and the narrative last year.
Yes.
With those wins at the end, it totally changed how people talked about this team. Probably irresponsibly, but nevertheless, you still want to get some of those good feelings in the building. It doesn't take any pressure off of you for having to add to a roster that is woefully deficient.
And look, I'm of the belief that it doesn't matter if the 49ers pick 1, 2, or 3. It really doesn't.
Sure.
Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, that pairing, with Kyle Shanahan being the one with absolute power,
yeah,
that pairing has to nail their pick, regardless of whether it's 1, 2, or 3. That pick has to be a bona fide starting player that can contribute next year toward this team being significantly improved and be a starting player that you're going to look back on in 3, 4 years when this team is, hopefully for them, a playoff team, and you look at them and you say, wow, okay, this is a guy you got. I go back to, you know, the 2008 49ers stunk, Well, they had Patrick Willis, who was a damn good player. And you fast forward 4 years later, and that team had Patrick Willis on a Super Bowl team. He's one of the best linebackers in the game. You need to find a guy that you know is going to be a part of a winner the next time you're a winner.
And to that point, not only do you need to draft him, you need to go out and sign proven ones because you got a lot of money to spend and you need a lot of help on this roster, yesterday's win notwithstanding. I am Matt Kolsky. He is JD, John Dickinson. We're in for Steiny and Guru today, and that means Rapid Fire is next. Phone number is 888-957-9570. We take your calls and reactions to the weekend coming up right after this. Matt Kolsky, JD, in for Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Stein, Metz, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
I'm Matt Kolsky. He's John Dickinson. We are in for Steiny and Guru today on a Victory Monday. You heard from Matt a lot of stuff we'll get into today. Draymond returning for the Warriors. Some winter meeting rumblings out of the baseball world. But we are all in on the football world right now. Wins for everybody except Reggie McKenzie, who was let go today. And it is nearly time for Rapid Fire. I will warn you, Jed York made an appearance in the Niners locker room yesterday that has a lot of people talking and that we will definitely get into a little later in this segment. But first, it's your turn to share with us. 888-957-9570 is the number for Rapid Fire.
It's time for Rapid Fire with Steiny and Guru. Your chance to sound off on the weekend's action. You've got 30 seconds. Rapid Fire starts now.
Kolsky and JD instead of Steiny and Guru, but you're the same. Line one, go. Go.
Victory Sunday makes for a happy Bay Area Monday. Man, those are two fantastic wins by the two teams that a lot of people thought were the worst in the league. But, you know, they came back around. I don't want to hear, oh, they should have lost with a draft pick. You know, you need a win here and there, like you guys pointed out the last segment. It was fantastic to see Derek Carr and Gruden and the Raiders take it to the Steelers. And it was good. You know, I'm still wearing black all the way from the head to toe to the back, but I'm not a hater. It was good to see the Niners take it to the Donkeys, even though they came in hot and cooled them off pretty much. Shout out to them. And I'll end it with a question. Who's worse right now? The Washington Redskins are two Bay Area football teams. Let's go, Uncle Goto.
Well, and the good news is for the 49ers and Raiders is they both won, so they both still are the worst in the NFL.
Both,
if you're into that draft pick sort of thing.
Both still tied for the worst record in the NFL.
Didn't change anything.
Yeah, it's okay. Line two.
Hello, this is Keith from Richmond. All I want to say is I trust in Gruden. Gruden is the process. And I will believe in him until the end of time. Cooper, he left us. He's dissing Oakland. You're not a Raider for life. I don't care about you anymore, Cooper. You gone. Matt, he's all right. You know, he got my respect. But Cooper, acting like a diva, you know what? I trust in Gruden, and we're going to get it done. And when we bounce back in 2 years, or maybe even next year, but when we bounce back and we're in the playoffs, AFC championship game, I don't want to see none of these fake Raider fans coming back. I don't want to see none of these radio stations, TV analysts, or anything coming back and trying to kiss our behinds. Go Raiders, Raider for life, go Gruden.
That's a very strong position.
Commitment to excellence.
Line three.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Good morning. I just want to say, man, big shout out to the Bay Area teams. You know, it's been hard watching these teams, you know, lose. But, hey, you know, I'm a Raider fan straight up. I was at the game yesterday. That was an electric atmosphere yesterday. They got a big win for us. Hey, Steelers fans, you can use those terrible towels. Wipe them tears because you ain't going no Super Bowl. You ain't going nowhere, baby, Raider Nation.
Yeah, Big Ben Steelers 0-4 in Oakland. Is that right?
That is 2006, 12, 13, and 2018. And the Raiders, they never won more than four games in any of those seasons.
Wow, that is a strange statistic. 888-957-9570, Rapid Fire, your chance to sound off. Line four.
Good afternoon, guys. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
I see both teams
They won. Play spoiler. Kasem, you're not that good. Big Ben, I'd rather see the Raiders get in there. But both these teams still keep their position for the top three. They both could use that wide receiver from Arizona State, D'Keal Harry, and one of those good either Bosa or Oliver. I think two of those three guys will be in the Bay Area next year. What do you think? And thanks for taking my call.
I think if two of those guys are in the Bay Area next year, we may get to see some sacks in the Bay Area, which would be fun.
Yeah, not too many of those
no.
The last couple of years.
Well, yeah.
Khalil Mack notwithstanding.
Right, right. This year, certainly, defense has been a struggle around these parts. Yesterday, the 49er defense, I mean, both defenses were better than they have been, but the 49er defense actually kind of impressed me. I believe that was Mitch who just insulted Case Keenum with the Trevor Siemian handle. I believe we heard that. I can't be sure. But Case Keenum's better than Trevor Siemian. He's had some good games this year, and the Niners did a good job. I think we'll talk a little later about the Robert Saleh situation, because he, I think, has drawn the most fire from media and fans around this Niners coaching staff.
Gotta have a scapegoat.
You do. And I think whether or not he could be a scapegoat at the end of the season is up for debate. Before we get to that, though, one of the sort of, is it fair to call it viral things from last night was Jed York's appearance speech in the 49ers locker room after the win. And for people who don't know, Jed's younger brother passed away, I think, about a week ago, right?
And Friday.
Less, yeah. And for him to be there and speak to the team and for them to dedicate, I mean, you can only imagine how upsetting it is to lose a younger sibling at such a young age. And obviously, condolences and our thoughts are with the family, but I thought Jed sort of seized the moment, not in a cynical way, but to let fans and media into the locker room a little bit and see the way, first of all, the kind of person he is, which I think is more important than we allow for, and also the way the team and Shanahan and Lynch reacted to him. And I think maybe we just play that speech right now and then we'll get into it.
This hasn't been the easiest year for any of us. It's probably the understatement of the year. My brother was a great kid. He loved everything about this. He loved everything about you guys. You know, it was hard for him sometimes, and I think he's at peace now. But I want you guys to know this. I talked to Kyle and John a little bit last night. Bill Walsh said something. I don't know if you shared it with them. But champions behave like champions before they're champions. This team is going to be a champion. I'm going to leave a ring when we get one for my brother. And I want everybody to look around this room. Know how good that we can be. Believe in this brotherhood. Believe in this guy. Believe in this guy. Believe in yourselves. And it's going to be about mental toughness. It's going to be about what can we get through more than the other 31 teams out there. And we are going to do it. You guys keep fighting your asses off. I'm going to get my brother a ring. I appreciate this very, very much.
He was obviously very emotional. And I think to the extent that you could see the other guys in the room, that speech hit home. It didn't look like a bunch of guys indulging the owner to me.
It was poignant. It was appropriate. It was thoughtful. I mean, under really the most difficult of circumstances possible. I mean, losing your brother when you're in your late 30s and he's in his mid 30s.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have a sister 5 years younger than me, and I can't even begin to. Yeah, it's remarkable that he was able to hold it together to give the speech that he did give.
And even be at the stadium.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I mean, nobody obviously would blame him if he wasn't.
No.
But it was, it just, Kyle Shanahan came out in the press conference after the game and he, dedicated that win to Tony York, and he had some extremely thoughtful comments, and you get to see inside the locker room the speech there, and it goes to show. Yesterday was a special win for the 49ers, more than just, hey, they hadn't won a game since the 1st of November, and you know, hey, trying to, you know, have some semblance of a positive before this thing wraps up. And Kyle Shanahan needed one, and Salah needed one. It was bigger than that yesterday once you kind of pulled back the curtain.
And I think if we're going on the field, obviously the biggest thing yesterday, I would say it probably surrounds this guy.
Mullins looking to throw. There's Kittle wide open. Kittle in Denver territory. Kittle is going to go. Touchdown. 85 yards. Somebody's got to cover George Kittle.
Good luck with that. I haven't found anyone who can cover George Kittle right now, and I think it's fair to ask, is that the best tight end in football?
I think he's in the conversation.
Yeah.
I think Travis Kelce would have something to say about that.
Yes. And you know, there's an imaginary Gronkowski out there somewhere who probably is still the best.
When he's not playing safety.
You know, for the commonly acknowledged greatest football coach of all time, Belichick makes a handful of curious, bordering on bad decisions that he gets away with. I don't know why we're not killing him for that yesterday, just like we should have killed him for failing to call a timeout appropriately in the Super Bowl and then getting lucky on an interception. Whatever.
Once you win rings, you get absolved of mistakes.
You can do anything
you
want.
Come on, you know that.
You're right. I don't know why I'm getting into that. But George Kittle, I think, clearly has breakaway speed more so than those other guys, right?
He does. Here's my thing, though. And look, Kittle is among the best tight ends.
There's
He's
no question about that.
He's developing himself into being among the best tight ends in football. For the purposes of a bigger conversation, though, here's my question. And I even go back to Jed York in the locker room. Champions behave like champions before they're champions.
The Bill Walsh quote.
When he quotes Bill Walsh. And you look at George Kittle yesterday, and he darn near breaks the all-time record for yards receiving
in a half.
In a game, in a half.
Yep.
He gets within 5 yards of the record, and you know Kyle Shanahan's apologizing to him multiple times late in the game that 49ers couldn't run one little five-yard pass to get him the record. But to go back to Jed York quoting Bill Walsh, champions behave like champions before they're champions. How many keepers do the 49ers have? How many champions do the 49ers have when this team is actually good again? Because I think George Kittle, if there's one positive out of this lost season, I think George Kittle is that positive. Whether he's the best tight end or the third best tight end,
yeah,
he's a keeper. And the 49ers, when you start to look at 2018 and move to 2019, I think you almost have to start having the conversation about how many keepers do they have, how many players do they have that are actually going to be contributors when this team is good.
No doubt. And I want to get into that in just a second, depth chart-wise. First, quickly, I want to hear Kyle Shanahan's comments on Kittle, because I think this is the point where, to me, he might elevate himself certainly into the conversation, possibly above some of the other guys in the league, if not now, next year.
But the thing that he's doing better, that I can say that he's done better than any tight end I've ever had, is what he's doing after the catch. You know, he does a good job beating man coverage and does a good job in his routes and does a great job blocking. But when that ball's in the air, I mean, the play is just starting. I mean, he's trying to catch it, and he runs angry and runs confidently that he expects to score in every look. And I think that's why it's been easier to get him the yards he has.
And to that point, based on what I've seen from Kyle Shanahan, not just in 2 years here, but in his career as an offensive coordinator, he gets guys open to catch the ball. If you're really good after the catch, you're going to thrive in an offense like this. And I think that makes all the difference for Kittle. And clearly, to your point, if we're talking keepers, I mean, Garoppolo maybe is 1A, but we haven't seen him in a while. Kittle's top of the list.
I mean, could you make a case that he's their best player?
I think certainly.
You absolutely could make that case.
We don't know about Garoppolo.
Or Garoppolo, right?
Right.
I mean, it's those three.
Could you throw McKinnon in there? Just because we haven't seen him?
No.
No,
I don't
think
you can because you haven't seen him.
You're right.
Now, maybe a year from now. He's a keeper because
you hope
you don't know.
Right. But
Breed is a keeper.
No doubt. And, I mean, okay. There's sort of separate conversations here, right? Because I almost responded to you, isn't Jeff Wilson kind of a keeper? Not on the level of Garoppolo.
No,
but I'd like to keep that guy on the roster. He's productive.
Yeah, see, this is where you and I disagree, because I could care less about the Jeff Wilsons and the Julian Taylors. And even
I'm too intrigued.
Even
by
the
it.
Like, not the DJ Reeds,
right. Prospect
like, no,
talent.
Like, for like, don't like. Yes, if
I have
if,
a problem.
If you build a Super Bowl roster and you want a bunch of those guys to be your third stringers, awesome. They can be your third stringers. But the reality for me is, they could be your third stringers, or you could go pluck five different guys off the street that or off of somebody's practice squad that could be Jeff Wilson. So to me, this if you look at a team that needs to go from bad to good next year, and I don't know that they have to necessarily be good, but they have to be on the cusp of being good.
I would say if they're not 500 next year, barring surprising disaster of some kind, if they're not at least 500 next year, this regime needs to worry about their jobs.
Yeah, and to me, it's I'll go a step below that. I think it's 7 wins.
Okay,
and you'll have to see how the rest of it looks.
Either way,
I'm not even saying you're wrong, because
right.
You might be right. If it's 7 wins, but there's a belief that it should have been 10,
yep.
and the
especially
coaching
if you blow
staff,
games late.
Exactly. And I think that's why Kyle Shanahan's been so frustrated with a lot of the close losses, because he knows that's the kind of thing when owners start looking at, can you win with this guy or that guy? Everybody points to coaching late in games. The reality is talent helps you, because you're
all
not necessarily
long.
Going to be
that's right.
in as many positions where you have to make one play here or there to
yeah.
win you a game. So, but to the bigger point, the 49ers, the mulligans are over. The honeymoon period is over. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have to add talent. But before you add talent, you have to see
what
who
got.
Your pieces are.
So let's get into that. If you want to weigh in with keepers on this 49er roster, the Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Phone number 888-957-9570. Quickly, for those of you asking, play of the game from Friday's Warriors, victory, because it's a victory Monday. We will get to that right after our next break, somewhere I would say 10:45-ish. It's your chance to win $100 if you guess the play of the game from that win. Right now, though, who do you see on this Niners roster as keepers? And obviously, Kittle is the easiest one to say right now, especially after yesterday. I think, obviously, because we haven't seen them and we've seen the team invest in them, Garoppolo and McKinnon have to be on that list as well. The other name that jumps out is DeForest Buckner. And I would say, of the rookie class, certainly McGlinchey and Warner look like definite keepers. And
yeah.
Pettis has made enough plays the last few weeks that I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I'd put Pettis in a different category. I mean, I think he's a guy you're definitely going to keep.
Right, he'll be here.
But he's more in the you don't really know yet.
That's fair.
You kind of like what you see, but you don't really know yet.
But as a rookie, he's obviously here next year.
I think Solomon Thomas is probably in that.
Yep.
And he had a pretty good game yesterday.
One of his best. Last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think Solomon Thomas is kind of in that category with Pettis, only obviously a year ahead of him in his growth. I think you also have some veterans that you would like to keep. Joe Staley's been around
not going
forever.
Anywhere. Richard Sherman's not going anywhere.
Another one, I think, veterans in that realm. But once you get past that, and I certainly agree with you on Buckner, once you get past that, and maybe a couple of the guards are in that, you know, we don't want to get
I think you'd probably,
too far down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, you're not going to replace Weston Richburg after his deal after 1 year, and you probably want to improve the interior of your line, so I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get an additional starting level guard, but guard play has not been the major issue this year.
They don't have enough keepers,
correct.
Is my point.
And they definitely don't have enough keepers, frankly, at the most important positions right now, which are wide receiver and defensive back. You got to have those things in today's NFL. Pretty much all the great teams have them. Kansas City, maybe not the defensive backs, but there's nothing in either of those departments that gets you really excited about next year.
No, they need corner help. They need safety help. They need linebacker help. And I think they need multiple players at all of those positions. And they need a pass rusher, which I think is probably more important than even the wide receiver and the corner.
Maybe, you're right.
Because Kyle Shanahan has shown that with Jimmy Garoppolo, he can make
receivers look better than they might be.
Exactly, yep. Right. So I think while wide receiver is definitely on the list, you might need two pass rushers, two linebackers, two safeties, two corners. That's the level of talent. And again, I don't mean third stringers that might move their way up to second stringers.
I mean
bona fide starting players that are going to be contributors when this team is good. Like yesterday felt great if you're a fan and you were in the stadium and, oh, they won and it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I didn't want them to lose every game.
Doesn't make next year's team any better.
It doesn't make next year's team any better, although I'm not of the belief that you screwed yourself because now you might get the number two pick instead of the number one pick because Arizona and strength of schedule, and it's going to be okay.
Right.
Whether you're one, two, or three even, you have to nail that pick. And he has to be a starting wide receiver or an elite pass rusher or a linebacker that's going to be an all-pro or a secondary piece that will help anchor with Richard Sherman the back end of the D.
And it's not going to be a wide receiver. So it's got to be one of the other guys because there is not that wide receiver isn't there this year. So if you're one, certainly you're considering Bosa. I think you're also considering whether you're one, two, or three, trading down. Because, as you said, there are a lot of holes to fill. And if you feel you can get, for instance, a high-quality linebacker and a worthwhile pass rusher instead of just a potentially elite pass rusher, that might have to be the decision you make. And that's why I think, actually, sure, the draft is important. You gotta nail whatever picks you do make. But free agency also critically important for this team, because, and not only that, but they're going to have to figure out how to marry those things in a successful way. Because when you have this many holes, you can't really afford duplication in that respect. You can't go out and sign someone and then it turns out the guy falls to you in the draft in the right spot or vice versa.
No, you have to just add talent every possible way you can add talent. And that's where I'm of the belief that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are on the clock. They're on the clock from the moment. They're not going anywhere. But they are feeling the pressure because it has to look a year from now, if we're doing this show after a game, December 9th, a year from now.
Yep.
I know today's the 10th, but it'll be the 9th on a Monday. If we're doing this show.
I'm impressed by that.
If you're doing this show, we're going to need to be talking about, wow, this team is 7-7.
This team has a shot to sneak into the playoffs and a wild card.
If they run the table, they can do this.
Right.
And
Jimmy Garoppolo's looked awful good.
Garoppolo is as advertised.
Yep.
And McKinnon, wow. If only they had had him last year. And boy, this new safety is awesome. And the corner they got in the third round isn't Akello Witherspoon. he's been the opposite of Akello Witherspoon to this point. Those are all the things that we're going to have to say a year from now. So, well, Shanahan and Lynch aren't going anywhere. The pressure is on those guys to get more players like Kittle. They need more Kittles at other positions.
And if we look at this roster, to your point, and it still looks like they've got eight keepers to add to become a relevant NFL team, that's where I think that's when both Lynch and Shanahan will start looking at their job security very, very seriously. More Niner talk coming up in about 20 minutes. Cam Inman will join us. Coming up next, though, it's the play of the game from Friday's Warriors win. That means it's your chance to guess what the play of the game was. And if you're right, you can win $100. Seems like fun to me. You don't have to risk any money. They don't have to, put $10 on the line or anything, guys. Wow. I should have been calling at 10:30 every day. What was I doing? 888-957-9570 is the phone number. Matt Kolsky and John Dickinson in for Steiny and Guru. Warriors play of the game is next.
Now, back to Stein, Metz, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Steiny and Guru on the afternoon shift today, I believe, walking you up to Golden State Warriors basketball as they host the Timberwolves tonight. The return of Draymond Green.
Noted. Great. We'll see y'all soon.
We'll see you tonight, Draymond. I'm very excited. I'll be in the house.
And the Warriors making the most, I think, of the stretch without Curry and Draymond after a rough, rough, rough beginning.
I think when you really take a step back and look at what their roster is without those two guys, they did just fine in their absence. We We'll get back into Niners at the top of the hour as Cam Inman from the Bay Area News Group will join us. But right now, it is time for the play of the game from Friday's Warriors win. Danny told me we had an open, but that was a lie. So instead, we're going to go to our contestant, John N. Martinez. Do you, sir, know what was the play of the game on Friday?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
When Jordan Bell went behind, or Jordan Bell went in between his legs and threw the ball to Curry, and Curry shot a three-pointer.
Let's go to the tape.
Now, here's the play of the game.
Here's Curry, penetrating, finds Bell, between the legs, bounce pass to Curry, fades to the right, fires for three, got it! Curry falling down in the process, and the Warriors lead by seven. Jordan Bell loves that between the legs bounce pass.
Count it!
Jing, jing, jing.
That's cash money for John and Martinez, $100. Congratulations to John. Did you see, I believe it was Zaza, I don't know if Zaza went on Twitter or if I just saw someone else commenting about it, saying like Zaza gave him the rights to that between the legs bounce pass. That was a favorite of the Zaza Pachulia era.
Yeah, Zaza taught him well. He listened to the teacher, and Zaza acknowledged that.
Not sure he listened on all that much, to be honest with you, but if he got the bounce pass between the leg, that's at least something. I want to, speaking of plays of games, throw one of the most remarkable football plays I've ever seen at UJD, and see where you're at on it.
Tannehill will throw it, and this will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle! Miraculous in Miami!
He's confused. It's Ian Eagle. He doesn't know what to say because that never happens.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't expecting it, although he did recognize that Rob Gronkowski was up against it a little bit.
And I just don't understand how we give Bill Belichick a pass for that. If that's a safety, Patriots win. Am I wrong? If there's a safety playing that spot, the Patriots win. He's tackled at the 2-yard line, knocked out of bounds.
Most likely.
Yeah. I mean, sure, anyone can fall over, but Gronk doesn't know how to play that spot, and it's not a Hail Mary situation. What's he doing in there? His legs are all broken.
It was a mistake. Bad mistake.
A literal loss-causing mistake. I don't know. I just like to attack Bill Belichick when I get my opportunities, because obviously they're few and far between. I want to ask you something before we get to Cam Inman to dig into this Niners victory a little bit. Nick Mullins had this to say about the victory.
Sure. Yeah, why not? I mean, we take one every week, one game at a time, one week at a time. We're excited, I guess you could say, to take them out of the playoff hunt. I believe they were in it. They were on a pretty hot streak. But it was great to get a team win. You know, defense did a great job. A number of stops that were very crucial in the point of the game. And then offense, everybody just worked together. And special teams, everybody did their part. And everybody worked really hard. And that's why I feel so good to win.
And I think that the thing he points out there, which is especially surprising given what we've seen all year, is that it really was a victory in all phases for the 49ers. I mean, the defense played well. The offense played well. Special teams, other than Richie James dropping it.
And they won critical moments.
Yeah.
That's the thing for me. They got out to a lead. Kittle helped them really extend the lead with the monster first half, but they won the critical moments. There were two fourth downs where the Broncos converted a bunch of fourth downs, but there were two the Broncos didn't convert, to where if they had converted those, they may not have needed the other ones later because they might have been ahead in the game, you know, in the middle of the fourth quarter, and the 49ers would have been up against it. And there were also a couple of third down conversions, mm-hmm. one to Dante Pettis, where Kyle Shanahan was screaming for a timeout that he didn't get,
yep.
and it winded up working out. And then the Trent Taylor sighting on a big third down, which iced the game over the middle. He got the catch that led to the two-minute warning, and the 49ers were able to run the clock out almost. They did have a bad clock gaffe, kneeling on the ball with time left on fourth down. But Again, other than that, it was a good day for the 49ers in terms of winning the moments that they had consistently been losing all season long with games on the line.
Can't get through 60 without something that's rather alarming. But overall, everyone pretty much did their job. We've got a measured voice joining us in 5 minutes in Cam Inman. So first, let's go to the Lunatic Fringe in Lafayette. What's up?
Hey, great win by the Niners. I was listening to the postgame show yesterday, and one of the hosts said, you know, what percentage of Kittle's success was on Kyle Shanahan and what's on Kittle? And he thought it was like more like 60-40 Kyle Shanahan scheming. But, you know, I think that downplays of how good an athlete and how really good George Kittle is. Guy's the second best tight end in the league. He leads in yards after catch because he breaks tackles. And also he's fast. I just think when you place too much emphasis on the coach, it takes away from the player's talent. These are professionals. You know, these aren't high school kids. And the talent ought to be appreciated. And that's all I have to say about that.
I think that's fair. 60-40 Shanahan certainly seems overly generous to the coach to me, but I do think Shanahan has an impact.
Well, you said it earlier in the show. I mean, he's got the ability to get really anybody open.
It's just
a matter of what you do with it once you get it. And I think that's where Kittle has been maybe the most valuable. It is being able to push through people. It is being able to run by people at a sneaky athletic, you know, in that kind of a way. I
mean, a lot of guys do both those
Richard
things.
Sherman, after the game, was among a couple of 49er players who made that exact point.
Should we hear that? Kittle is
better athletically than you think.
You know, we're happy for him. He deserves everything he's getting. You know, obviously he deserves to be a Pro Bowler this year. He's been, you know, arguably the best tight end in football. You know, no disrespect to Kelce or Gronk or any of those other guys that are playing good football. But, you know, to be a second-year player, playing the way he is, he makes an impact every game. Like, he's our number one receiver yards-wise and targets-wise. And it's not like it was a surprise that we're throwing the ball to him against Denver and they still couldn't stop him. You know, it's not like we're trying to disguise things. He's just beating guys one-on-one and having a day. Yeah, 210 yards in the first half. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen that done, period, in any game.
Do we know if that's been done? 210 yards in a first half receiving? I'm sure there must be a wide receiver who's managed that at some point. But it can't be very many. And definitely, we know it's not a tight end. We know a tight end has never done that.
Yeah, because Shannon Sharp got 214 in a full game.
Right.
And that's the NFL record, which Kittle couldn't get. 7 catches, 210 yards in the first half. And 1 target in the second half, no catches, no yards. They couldn't get him that extra 5.
And frankly, Kyle Shanahan's right to apologize to him for that. You couldn't get him 5 yards, really?
Well, I think they got some different looks early. And then what happened was as the game got tighter,
yes,
it became more about, we've got to run the football here. We've got to make sure we keep the clock moving. I mean, they should have done it early.
Yes.
And then when they didn't do it early, the game dictated that they couldn't do it late. And then they were in a position where they just couldn't do it at all because they were trying to run the clock out.
And I feel like there are 49er fans who probably actually feel good about that, because at least it was evidence of Kyle Shanahan making decisions to get the game over with and not decisions to have another explosive offensive play, which he's certainly been criticized for in the past, not the least of which in the Super Bowl.
What I thought was interesting, too, is there was varying, you know, questions asked among different, you know, Kyle Shanahan, different players. When did you know? How did you know he was close to the record? I thought it was hilarious because there were a handful of players that said, well, we didn't know. Nobody knew. And Kyle Shanahan kind of alluded to the fact that he didn't necessarily know, but then he did know, and then people were, apparently somebody at halftime comes in and says something, so players know at halftime, just this odd dynamic. You know, in an NBA game,
everybody's
got a stat sheet seemingly on the bench and knows exactly how many you need.
Oh,
but
for
clearly
sure.
There were enough people in the 49ers that knew how close he was, but once they didn't get it done early, they found it difficult to get it done late. I think the 49ers, though, the most important thing is they didn't have another fourth quarter collapse. They were able to make enough plays to get a win.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter if you're under-talented. If you collapse in the fourth over and over again as a coach, it's just a terrible look. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM at HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors, who host the Timberwolves tonight and the return of Draymond Green. But right now, talking a little Niners football with Cam Inman, who, of course, covers the Niners for the Bay Area News Group. And, Cam, let me just start you with this. We've heard sound today from Nick Mullins saying it was a statement win. Both JD and I have talked about how getting a win in a season like this does have just some emotional value. How big was yesterday's victory in your mind?
Well, from a 49er overall perspective, they needed a morale boost after two really bad road losses and just to feel better about themselves. You know, they had such good feelings last December winning five games with Jimmy Garoppolo, and it wasn't all Jimmy. Everybody kind of stepped their games up. And, you know, this was a game where the 49ers need to start evaluating some of the younger players, and they did. And one of them, obviously, is George Kittle, who's, you know, he's only 25. It's his second year in the league. And he used that game really to showcase what a great season he's having. And everybody basically around him was playing pretty well, too, through the first half. And then they got to the second half. And fortunately, the offense stayed on the field long enough towards the end there to keep the ball out of the Broncos' hand for probably what would have been yet another fourth quarter collapse.
Cam, we were throwing it around earlier, big picture, and I want to bring you into this conversation and topic. The idea of how many keepers the 49ers have on their roster. George Kittle, with a bullet this year, has said, I'm a keeper, I'm a franchise tight end moving forward, I'm a player that should be on this team the next time this team is a good football team, a playoff contending football team. The question I have is, how many other guys do they have of that ilk, and how many do you legitimately need to get back to a playoff level?
Well, let's start with the bottom part of that question. You need, playoff-wise, I think you need at least, you know, half your roster. They're automatic locks where, you know, okay, these guys are here for 5-10 years. You know, this is like that. You go back to the Niners team that made the playoffs 5 years ago, and you had this core group of guys.